Page 246, Conquest of Doubt Through Insight and Path Knowledge. Freedom from hindrances by itself will not enable us to overcome doubt. We should try to overcome it till it is uprooted on the sotapatti level. So even after the mental purity has been attained with the extinction of the hindrances, we should keep on watching the rise and fall and other psychophysical phenomena. The yogi then discriminates between the object that is watched and the watching awareness. He will note as he watches that the stiff, moving and arising corporeality is one thing and the watching consciousness is another. He will make the same distinction at the moment of sitting, bending, etc. In short, the distinction between the corporeality and the sense door consciousness will become apparent at every moment of mindfulness. The insight into such a distinction is called nama, rupa, paricheda, jnana. This insight is the basis of vipassana practice, and so it is important to have it in its proper perspective. It is only after the independent, proper development of the nama, rupa, paricheda insight in the course of the practice of mindfulness that the yogi makes progress and passes through the higher stages of insight knowledge. The distinction between nama and rupa, which the yogi then realizes, is real. Originally, it is impossible to distinguish between nama and rupa. The two are closely bound up and do not lend themselves to intellectual analysis. For example, when you move your hand, you cannot differentiate its motion from the desire to move it. When you watch and the distinction becomes clear, it is not possible to confuse one with the other. The watched corporeality and the watching consciousness remain sharply distinct. The distinction is born in on you at every moment of watching, and so is the non-existence of the living ego or soul apart from nama and rupa. This is the purity of belief. As you keep on watching, you will realize the causal relation that, for example, your hands bend because of the mind's desire to bend them, that one has conscious sense door consciousness because there is an object for it, and so on. You reflect on the causal relation between defilements in your previous times and the manifestation of nama and rupa, such as rebirth linking consciousness in your present life. The causal relationship between the good and the evil that you experience, your effort and good and hope for a good life and the continuity of nama-rupa in the future life. This insight into the conditioned nature of nama-rupa is called pachaya, parigaha, jnana. So for the yogi, it is crystal clear that nama-rupa is only conditional, or just mere cause and effect, and that there is no permanent soul or ego entity that passes on from one life to another. This is kankha vitarana visuddhi, or purity of escape from all doubt. With this purity, the yogi is free from all doubts, such as, did I exist in the past? Did I come into existence only in this life? Was I created by devas? Was I created by a god? Will I continue to exist after my death, etc.? For he is convinced of the cause and effect relationship between one life and another and the non-existence of a living soul. So the yogi should overcome doubt through this purity. Then he must keep on watching. He will see the watched phenomenon arising and passing away. He realizes the law of impermanence and the suffering of life that is unsatisfactory and undependable. He becomes aware, too, of the conditionality of everything. His awareness is not confined to nama and rupa. It encompasses all the phenomena that arise from six senses. This kind of awareness is of a piece with what the Buddha says, sabbang parinyayang. Everything is to be analyzed and known in terms of impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and non-self. When such analytical insight knowledge is complete, the yogi will, while watching the ceaseless arising and passing away of nama rupa, see the cessation of nama rupa formations, that is nibbana, at the Sotapatti stage of the path. He cannot then have any doubt about the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, nor will he be skeptical about his practice, the past and the present, the future of life cycle, or the conditionality of all phenomena. The yogi is then beyond all doubt. Such a yogi who is totally free from all doubt is a Sotapanna. So you should overcome doubt, at least on the Sotapanna level. Kodha, anger. There are unwholesome emotions called upakalesa, which defile the mind. The first of these defilements is anger. We usually fly into a rage in the face of an odious sense object. Some are very short-tempered and highly sensitive. They become furious when they hear even a slight remark that offends them. Their faces blacken, they scowl, and rave without restraint. Anger thus causes instant disfigurement, and according to the Buddha's teaching in Chula Karma Vibhanga Sutta, it leads to hell in a future life and makes its victim ugly in his or her rebirth in the human world. If a man restrains his anger, even when there is occasion for it, and speaks pleasantly and sweetly, he will not become ugly but retains his good look. On his death, he will land in the Deva world, and when he is reborn as a human being, he is likely to become a handsome person. I have told you of the harm and the good that anger and forbearance can do you with illustrative stories in my other discourses, and so I will not now dwell on them. Forbearance brings us instant benefit, so we should exercise it. When we are angry, we must not give vent to anger in speech or bodily behavior, but watch and lay it to rest. If our remark or facial expression betrays it, we must try to overcome it before it draws the attention of other people. We must affirm the will to compose ourselves and restrain anger under circumstances that may provoke other people. Upanaha, harboring spite. Some people not only give way to their anger, but also harbor spite against the object of their offense. In other words, they are out to take revenge when they have the opportunity to do so. Some bear grudge not only against living beings, but also against lifeless objects, such as a stump or a post. They would beat or batter a stump when they stumble over it. When they bump against a post, they would deliberately bump their heads again and again against it. If a thing topples or rolls away or falls down, they would break or throw it away in a rage. Such a short-tempered man who behaves like a lunatic is a laughingstock and a pitiable creature in the eye of observers. Cause of spitefulness. There are 9 reasons why we bear spite against a person. We bear spite against a person, 1, because he has done something harmful to our interests, or 2, because he is now doing harm to us, or 3, because he will do us harm in future, or 4, because he has done harm to our beloved, or 5, because he is now doing harm to our beloved, or 6, because he will do harm to our beloved in future. In the latter 3 cases, we bear grudge against a person not for self-preservation, but for the sake of someone whom we love, for example, a member of the family, a relative, a friend, a teacher, or a pupil. We bear malice when our son is ill-treated or our daughter is molested. Again, we bear a grudge against a person. 7, because he has done good to someone whom we hate, or 8, because he is doing good to someone we hate, or 9, because in future he will do good to someone we hate. These are the causes of spitefulness. We should not harbor spite, because spitefulness is harmful to us in the present life, as well as after our death. If A bears spite and does something harmful to B, the latter's descendants will seek to settle old scores, and again, A's descendants will try to get even with them. This feud will continue endlessly, and thus the destructive effect of spitefulness is obvious in this very life. Mutual ill will also tends to lead to enmity and disaster through the samsaric existence, life cycle, as is evident in the story of Kalyakini in the commentary on the Dhammapada. The story of Kalyakini. Long, long ago, there was a man who supported his mother without getting married. He worked single-handed at home and at his farm. Seeing this, his mother told him to get a wife as his helpmate. He said that he wished to remain unmarried in order to devote his full attention to her welfare. But she urged him again and again, and so at last he married a woman. He did not have any child by his wife. So in compliance with the wish of his mother, he reluctantly kept a young woman as his second wife. In due course, the younger wife became pregnant. Being jealous and concerned about her future, the elder wife put some drug in the food that destroyed the pregnancy. She caused the second abortion in the same way. Then, on the advice of her neighbors, the young woman did not tell the elder wife anything about her third pregnancy. But the elder woman found it out and tried to destroy it. But the pregnancy, being in an advanced stage, she did not succeed outright, but caused much suffering to the young woman. So on her deathbed, the lesser wife said, "Sister, you told me to live in this house, and yet you yourself have destroyed my pregnancy thrice." And she willed, "May I in my future life be an ogress and in a position to eat your children." After her death, she became a cat in the same house. The elder woman died too, because she was beaten by her husband for making him childless. She became a hen in the house. When the hen laid an egg, the cat came and ate it. After she had eaten the eggs thrice, the cat was about to eat the hen herself, when the latter prayed that she might be able to get even with her enemy in her next life. On her death, she was reborn as a she-leopard, whereas the cat became a doe. The female leopard ate the doe's litters thrice and finally ate up the doe herself. But before she died, the doe prayed for the opportunity to take vengeance in her next life. Sure enough, on her death, she became an ogress, while her old enemy was reborn as a woman of Sarvati city. When, as a married woman, she gave birth to a child, the ogress came disguised as her friend and ate the child. When she got the second child, it was again eaten up by the ogress. When she became pregnant for the third time, she went to her parents' house for security, after naming the child. She left for her home with her husband. On the way, while her husband was bathing in a pond near the Jetavana monastery, the ogress appeared. The woman called her husband loudly and ran into the monastery with her child. At that time, the Buddha was preaching to some bhikkhus and lay followers. The woman crouched at the feet of the Buddha and appealed for help. The deva, guarding the entrance, forbade the ogress to enter the monastery. The Buddha sent Ananda to bring the ogress. At the sight of her enemy, the child's mother was alarmed, but the Buddha soothed her. The Lord then gave a talk, stressing the fact that it was forbearance and not retaliation that helped one to overcome another's enmity. At the end of the talk, the ogress became a Sotapanna, and there was no longer any enmity between her and the woman. By order of the Lord, the woman took the ogress to her house and boarded her. According to the Dhammapada commentary, the ogress forecast the weather and guarded the woman's household. The long-standing feud in this story would not have come to an end but for the Buddha's intervention. The story leaves no doubt about the evils of spitefulness. Retaliation may lead to wrongs done to noble ones. The person against whom we bear spite may be an ordinary person, but the victim of our vengeance may turn out to be a noble one, an arahat, or even a Buddha. Thus Devadatta and Chinjamana had ill will against the Bodhisatta, but it was against the Buddha that they plotted. Again, a woman who was robbed and killed by four young men prayed for an opportunity to take vengeance. But when she became an ogress and finally paid off old scores, all the victims happened to be arahats. She disguised herself as a cow and gored to death Bahiya Dasura Rusiriya soon after his attainment of arahatship, Pakusati soon after he attained Anagami stage, the leprous Supabuddha, who was a Sotapanna, and Tambadatika soon after he attained insight knowledge. So she incurred the heavy karmic debt resulting from her murder of the arahats. Thus, spitefulness is very destructive, and it is best to exercise forbearance. Let us then affirm that we will take things philosophically. In other words, if we suffer at the hands of others, we should regard it as repayment of an old karmic debt and cultivate loving kindness in order to overcome ill will and lessen defilements. Ingratitude, makkha. Makkha means ingratitude to a person to whom we should be grateful for help or acts of kindness. A good man should have a sense of gratitude to his benefactor, even though he may not be able to show it. He must express it verbally and, if possible, repay the other's kind acts. This is part of our moral tradition, and yet some fools who are steeped in ignorance tend to speak impertinently to their benefactors. They are ungrateful and speak lightly of what their parents, teachers, or friends have done for them. Some do not only lack a sense of gratitude, but they do things that are harmful to their benefactors. According to the Buddha, there are two types of rare persons. There are persons who give priority to other people's welfare. They first work for the welfare of those who have never done anything beneficial to them. They are motivated by pure love, pure compassion or pure goodwill, and they do not expect any reciprocal service from their beneficiaries. Such cases of pure altruism, as exemplified by parents in their relation with their children, are indeed rare. Equally rare are the persons who have a sense of gratitude or who reciprocate other people's acts of goodwill. At the very least, we should acknowledge what we owe to others, and if possible, we should reciprocate their goodwill by deed or word. We must defend our benefactors if we see or hear anyone doing or saying something harmful to them. We should promote their welfare by deed or word. A person who thus recognizes his indebtedness to another by doing a good turn reciprocally is called Katavedi in Pali. Such kinds of persons are rare indeed. We do not attach much value to abundant things, such as grass, stones, etc., because they are available everywhere. But rare things, such as diamonds and rubies, are very valuable. Likewise, people who have a sense of gratitude are rare, and so they are noble, whereas ungrateful persons, for whom you can find everywhere, are mean and low. So you should try to belong to the class of noble men of sterling character, and to this end, you should be grateful to others for what they have done in your interest, and do them favour by way of reciprocation. Sariputta's sense of gratitude.